AK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. At the White House, President Trump has signed a deal to keep TikTok up and running in the U.S. It allows U.S. stakeholders to buy the Chinese-owned company due to national security concerns. Here's ABC's Mary Bruce.
TikTok's U.S. operations will now be run by this new joint venture, with American users' data stored in the U.S. and overseen by the cloud computing firm Oracle. And perhaps most importantly, this new ownership group will get a copy of the algorithm, that secret sauce that makes TikTok so addictive. Trump says other American investors, including Michael Dell of Dell Technologies and the Murdoch family, will also play a role.
Authorities in Dallas say they found evidence that the suspected gunman who opened fire yesterday at an ICE facility harbored hate against the federal government and meant to target ICE agents. Instead, police say one detainee was killed and two others injured when he fired on a transport van. No law enforcement officers were injured. On Wall Street, stocks extended losses for a third day. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Realtors Association has released its August real estate report showing another increase in median home prices. According to the report, the statewide median home price rose by over 5% since August of 2024 to $338,000. The report also found a nearly 2% increase in existing home sales compared to last year and about a 1% increase in year-to-date home sales. Organization officials say the data in the report could indicate a market shift that could benefit first-time home buyers. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development have announced a new round of commercial driver training grant funding. According to a press release, the program aims to support the state's driving workforce with sustainable wages, recruitment, and helping drivers obtain a commercial driver's license. Trainers who are listed on the Federal Training Provider Registry operate in Wisconsin and provide training that meets entry-level requirements could receive a portion of the funding. Applications will be accepted until October 28th. With Northern Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany officially launching his bid for governor in the 2026 election, a candidate has already emerged for his congressional seat. Jesse Ebbin of Stanley officially announced her candidacy for the 7th Congressional District this week. According to her campaign announcement, Ebbin describes herself as a Trump conservative and says she's running for Congress to secure the southern border, unleash American energy, lower costs for Wisconsin families, and to stand with law enforcement. The Superior Police Department is investigating after a man was found deceased in the middle of the road around Wisconsin Point. According to law enforcement authorities, officers responded to reports of a man lying in the middle of the road at around 1:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning. First responders attempted life-saving measures when they arrived, but the 53-year-old Superior man was pronounced deceased at the scene. The Superior Police Department is still working to identify the cause of death and have not yet released his identity. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers return home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers are back to host the Reds tomorrow night. They beat the Padres 3-1 to finish the regular season with the most wins on the road, 45. Jackson Chourio, though, just 1-for-4 at the plate. Pat Murphy.
He's had some not-so-good at-bats where he leaves his zone, chases down especially, or chases up. As young as he is, hopefully he learns.
NFL, it's the Packers and the Cowboys in Dallas on Sunday night. I asked Micah Parsons if he's ever spoken to Cowboys owner Jerry Jones since being traded to Green Bay.
Nah, I mean, I never even heard from Jerry Jones himself when I even got traded. I found out through my agent. Like, I haven't talked to Jerry Jones since, like, what, OTAs?
Jones on The Fan in Dallas.
Jerry, do you think with the Micah deal that you let your money get mad and it just became a little bit too personal versus a football decision?
Absolutely not. Not at all. It was nothing personal. I told you I like Micah.
That's Cowboys owner Jerry Jones with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
107.5 WLAK, Amory's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
Tons of sunshine, not only today, tomorrow, for the entire weekend, but even into next week. A dry stretch and unseasonably warm. Highs today flirt with 80 degrees. Tomorrow and for the weekend, the mid-70s. And back to nearly 80 degrees on Monday. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 77 degrees at our studios.
Matt Nair on air.
The borders are. Tom Homan was investigated for accepting $50,000 from undercover FBI agents.
50 grand in a fast food bag as a payoff. If Kamala Harris would have accepted a fast food bag full of fast food, it would have been congressional hearings, yes, yes. 24 hours on every network, yep, that hated them.
It's corruption palooza, man.
Yeah. Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
My problem is I don't ever eat fish fries, so when I do it, I overdo it. I ordered a large perch, ate everything on my plate, and I felt like I wanted to die. And now I don't want to eat fish again, maybe ever.
I know it's a staple to get breaded fish, but if you don't get the bread on it, you know, you can kind of get away with eating more.
I'm not trying to gain weight for football here. I'm like, I just want to have a nice meal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
From the comments of former head coach of Wisconsin Barry Alvarez to the Brewers heading into the playoffs, there's a lot going on in Wisconsin sports. We'll discuss it with former Badger and NFL veteran Brady Ewing next time.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a special episode of the Maggie Dawn Show. We are broadcasting live from the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green. This is the Reisinger family farm where they, for over 100 years, have been raising animals and crops right here in the hills of Sauk County. I'm so excited because not only are we here live at their farm, it is the 49th anniversary of Jim and Jean Reisinger, and we're going to celebrate that with all of you today. I'm also going to be joined by Brian Reisinger, Jim and Jean's son, as well as their daughter, Malia, who's carrying on their proud family farming tradition. Brian Reisinger has written quite a book. I would recommend it to everyone who basically eats food. Yeah, so that would be everyone. This book is called Land Rich, Cash Poor. It was published in 2024 to great acclaim. Since then, it has been named the 2025 Book of the Year by the Farm Foundation, and it received a Reader's Favorite Book Award. C-SPAN picked it as one of its author's series. The Associated Press has covered it. It's an incredible encapsulation of what has gone on in agriculture, in farming in this country, for over 100 years. It is a microcosm told through the lens of the Reisinger family, but it is a story that affects us all to this day, and it speaks to some of the challenges that we are all facing in this country in this very moment. So with that, it is my very big privilege to welcome Jim Reisinger. Happy anniversary, sir, and Brian Reisinger. Thank you for letting us come to your farm today.
It's a pleasure to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. Brian, congratulations on the book. Yeah. We got introduced a few months back. It's so fun to be here on your family's farm. And again, congrats on the book. It is quite a powerful account that I think, again, every American should take a read on. I wanted to start this afternoon by asking you to read what I found to be one of the most powerful passages. You open the book with this. If you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of a read of your book, Land Rich, Cash Poor.
I'm happy to, and thank you for that. And I just got to say, what people are going to hear is what we really lived. And I owe it to my dad, my sister, my mom. Excuse me. I get emotional thinking about it. My family being willing to tell this story and us being able to maybe pick our heads up from the work for just a little bit to share a farm story that a lot of farm families maybe would have shared, but they've been too busy trying to make a living.
Yes.
And so I'm happy to share. So
please, folks, this is the beginning of Brian's book, Chapter 1. Again, the book's title is Land Rich, Cash Poor. Here's Brian Reisinger giving us a reading, the author himself.
There are more tears on this land than we want to admit. My dad and I were on sacred ground back at the small cabin I own on a 40-acre parcel behind the farmhouse where we both grew up. This land upon which my grandpa turned out milk cows to graze years ago, and my dad journeyed to bring them into the warm barn each morning. My dad's hands are big and calloused from decades of hard labor, his back still strong, but not as straight as it once was. We sat there on the porch in the sun, and the trees seemed to whisper of those things we'd lost. My father quietly broke into tears, like rain that starts suddenly while the sun is still shining, the earth feeling more than one thing at once. So, too, for our family, with it all had been taken from us and all we had yet to save. The wind blew the wild grass, and I thought of my father's fields beyond and how hard we'd fought to keep them. For our family, the story of the disappearing American farmer, a threat not only to those living it, but also to the life of our nation, began here on this land. This plot turned our family from dirt poor to middle class in one generation during the depths of the Depression, carried two more generations forward, and gave way to the generation of me and my sister and her kids, until the rest of the world shifted and left us behind. I thought of all that and everything we'd survived since, not only the pandemic, but also four recessions in my lifetime alone. Cows, milking cows through below zero weather, my dad in the hospital when I was a boy. Surely the resilience of the American farmer, paired with some new ideas and blessings from above or luck on the ground, could get us through.
Thanks so much, Brian. It's really powerful. You're describing this moment, a pivot point in your family's farming tradition of over 100 years where you sold off your dairy cows. And I just wanted to start, Jim, in that day, in that moment, that is a sea change, a shift. What were the feelings? I know for you, and as Brian described in the book, obviously sadness, but also was there some hope in passing the torch to your daughter and what this next generation might bring to this very hallowed land?
It was definitely a quite a moment, really. Brian was in the barn with me. Malia was in the barn with me, and the cows did not want to go.
Yes.
I just stood back and left them do the work. And at the end, it's sad, you know, to see my life just done, you know, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for my daughter and son coming forward and saying, you got to do something different, Dad. We got to change this freestall into custom raising heifers. Mm. And that's what we're doing now. We're custom raising heifers for a different dairy farmer. We're still making money, you know. Otherwise, we would be lost, in a sense.
Jim, I just want to say, and to you, Brian, and your entire family, thank you so much for sharing your story here today and through the book. It is very rare that I think many of us see our life's work in a physical embodiment, and we, very few of us actually can see in reality, in a physical way, when our life's work pivots and changes.
Definitely.
And you showed such courage and strength. One of the things that I've said about Wisconsinites is we are very proud about tradition and we are a little bit hesitant to change. So
no, definitely. I don't want to change, but I've got to.
I want to honor that. And sir, I just want to express my deep respect for that and your faith in your daughter, who we'll talk to a little bit later,
yes,
to continue this on. I think that takes an incredible person and an incredible family to come together for that. Brian, in writing this and in talking with so many members of your family, what was that like? The moment itself is challenging and it's so emotional. We relive it here together again. What was it like, the process of writing this incredible family history?
Well, it really began with the family stories, you know. I mean, I grew up hearing bits and pieces, you know, a great uncle who lost his leg in the fields and, you know, grandpa, there was a fire at the house when he was a kid and, you know, mom and dad had a drought the year they were married and somehow mom still married dad.
Yes. You know? And I give her credit for that.
We're all glad she did. But, you know, you hear these bits and pieces. And growing up working with my dad in the farmyard, I knew that farms were disappearing because it was happening right down the road. There used to be half dozen farms, you know, just around this vicinity, and now there's two. And
there's only one.
Yeah,
one. On this road,
yeah,
anyway.
That's right. Mm. And, you know, so I knew that things were changing and disappearing. What I didn't know was why. And when I decided to write this book and weave our family's honest story with the hidden forces that were making farms disappear, I found that it was a very rewarding experience, but also one that kind of shocked me because talking with three generations of my family, my great-grandparents had passed before I was born, but we talked to every other generation and other people who are around to reconstruct all this. The things I learned about the resilience of my family generations before I was born and my parents' story and everything else, and the ways that that connected with what it seemed like was happening with farms and our economy all across the country, it just kind of shocked me, you know? And I write in the early morning when only the farmers are up and when my head is clear. And there were a lot of mornings of laughter and there are a lot of moments of tears. And if people had been sitting outside while I was writing, they probably would have thought I was losing my mind in there.
I think some of our listeners think I'm losing my mind. I choke up and have moments on the air all the time with folks listening. I think, again, the idea of trying to record the history of the American farmer, and Brian, you and I have talked about this on this program before, but even before we were getting on, that you actually, farmers have to take a break to tell their story, and there's so much that has not been told about the farmer's story. Jim, I wanted to just ask you, you've obviously read your son's work.
Yes.
What was it like revisiting for you, for example, Alice and Teresa's story, and the fact that he came here with just a few shekels in his pocket, the $25, and the story of their meeting, and revisiting your family's history from your son's words. What has that experience been like for you, sir?
It's just been, for him writing that book is just outstanding because he did all the history of it through my aunts and uncles, and being where the farm was down in a hole. Mm. And when it's down in a hole, there's nothing down there really except spring water.
And Jim, tell the listeners a little bit where we are. You call it the hilltop farm, but when Alice came here, the preference often was for flat farmland, and he picked this place and it led to dairy. Tell us a little bit about that.
He picked that place because he was hiding from the Germans in Germany. And it's very steep and just hidden, but it had spring water, which they needed, and it had a big garden, what they put all a lot of potatoes and lettuce, all the crops for, you know. And they worked that land. They cleared the trees and everything, and they made a lot of pasture for the cows. They only had, 15 cows. That's all they had. And they had the pigs and the chickens. But it's just astonishing that they still lived and still got going.
The rough and tumble world, you describe your great-grandfather, Alice, coming to the United States, Brian.
Yes.
And he had been effectively under contract to return to Germany if the first, what we now refer to as the First World War, got started. So there was this family oral history of, was he hiding out here? Did he just end up picking this because it was available land? I found that absolutely captivating. Yeah. Jim, you look like you want to get in on that. So what were you going to say, sir?
No, he found that land down there, and he just wanted to be hidden, period.
Well, and you described, Brian, that he spent some time alone.
Yeah.
And there is this deep sense that I got in the beginning of your book about your grandfather's commitment. I'm going to make this work. Yeah. This is difficult. It's not the ideal land. I've got to maybe hide. I'm not sure. He spends some time alone, and then he finds Teresa, and they begin their life together. This goes back into the basically early 1900s. And you begin to describe how they build this legacy. Brian, just very briefly, when you look that far back into your family's past, and we got about a minute here, what does that mean for you and Malia and your kids now, the new fifth generation?
I just think about what a proud tradition it is.
Yes.
And the resilience, you know, to have a man come across an ocean what he was trying to do is avoid fighting in World War I for Germany. He wanted to be in America, and he dug a living out of the dirt. And for our family to be standing today after starting there, it's just such a source of hope, I think.
Yes, a source of hope for all of us. It is truly an American story. We're going to continue to learn about the past and the present and the future of the Reisinger family here at Hilltop Farm in Spring Green. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. We got a special edition of the show all about the proud tradition of family farms here in Wisconsin and America.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drugged driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. A shared message from the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Maine voters decide November 4th whether adding more ID and mail-in voting restrictions for most voters justifies preventing almost non-existent voter fraud. Question 1 tightens voter ID requirements and adds hurdles for mail-in voters, including the elderly and disabled, despite only 2 voter fraud convictions since 1982. About half of Maine's over 842,000 2024 voters used a mail-in ballot, and over 16,000 subscribed to an ongoing absentee voter list, according to the state's September 2025 figures. If approved, Question 1 would eliminate the absentee list and prohibit requesting an absentee application by phone. It also prohibits third parties from delivering absentee ballot applications, including family members, and limits drop boxes. Maine's population is the oldest in the U.S., with 21.8% of residents over 65. Question 1 also narrows Maine's voter ID options, eliminating student IDs, tribal IDs, and other currently acceptable documents, despite no evidence of abuse. At almost 75%, Maine consistently has one of the highest voter turnouts in the country, and the Heritage Foundation's own figures show just 2 convictions for voter fraud in over 40 years. We have the text of Question 1 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's a special edition of The Maggie Dawn Show. We're here on the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin, with the Reisinger family. They have been farming this land, both agricultural products and livestock, for over 100 years. It's an especially wonderful day. Not only is the sun shining, it's a balmy 80 degrees. It is also the 49th wedding anniversary of the matriarch and patriarch of this family farm, Gene and Jim Reisinger. Again, Gene and Jim, happy anniversary. Gene has now joined us with their son, Brian, who wrote the book Land Rich, Cash Poor, about your family's shared tradition and history and legacy here on this very land that we sit on today. Happy anniversary, Gene. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. We're enjoying it.
I am too. It's such a privilege to be here. Let's just get to know Jim and Jean a little bit. I heard that you all met on a blind date.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about this. And I also heard that you maybe wouldn't have been interested in Jim, Jean, if you would have known he was a farmer. But there was a little spark there on that first blind date. Jean, tell us, what about this man that you've spent these amazing 49 years with drew you in on that very first date?
Well, the very first date we went on was a planned blind date, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I just asked his height. That was important since I'm 6 foot tall and he was 6 foot tall.
Jean, I knew you. I knew I liked you immediately when we met, as I am also 6 feet tall.
Yeah. So as the date progressed, within 35, 40 minutes, he told me he would be a farmer the rest of his life, as long as he had the ability to farm. And whoever would marry him would need to farm. And I was totally taken back because this was a first date, and I thought that was just, this is going to end soon. It'll be over.
Well, it's been 49 years, Gene. How is that prediction bearing out here?
Yeah, yeah. And 6 dates later, we got engaged.
Oh, my goodness.
So there you go.
Well, again, my most heartfelt congratulations to you both. You both have lived through quite a changing period of time for the family farm in the United States here, and frankly, globally, a lot of consolidation that we've seen. Jim, you were describing in our last segment how there used to be other family farms in this very valley here in Spring Green. Now there's only one remaining on the road I drove in on. What has it been like for you as the head of the family, in partnership with Gene, also as the head of the family, to see all of these changes and for your marriage and your family to evolve right along with the evolution of farming in the United States? Gene, I'm going to start with you and then we'll go to you, Jim. What has it been like? Do you feel like your family is evolving and reflective of the changes in farming in the United States over your near 50 years together?
I think our family has been very diversified. They've learned what it's like. They've been resilient. They've been able to get through some times that we've had to have bad times till we got to the good times. Yeah. And they've been very understanding. Mm. They've also learned to appreciate what they have.
It takes a family to run a farm like this. Everybody's got to pitch in, Jim. You learned that at the elbow of your dad, Albert, growing up. When you now are looking with Gene to pass the torch to your daughter, Malia, whom we'll talk to a little bit later, did you, when you were a young man and met Jean, ever imagine that it might be your daughter that would carry on the family tradition?
Not at all. Not at all. She is a special lady, I'll tell you that. Take on this work. You know, also Brian was there also helping.
Yeah.
Because when we, before that, I got really sick and Brian was there to help me do all the farm work. He got up early in the morning and to milk the cows and feed the cows. Now Malia's doing the same thing, you know. She's really digging in. So,
Gina, I was wondering if you could just share with our listeners a bit, when you had both kids and the farm was active, tell me what an average day for Gene Rensinger was back a few decades here with the two little kids and the farm to run. When did you generally get up in the morning, Gene?
Well, I get up about 3 o'clock, cleaned my house, washed my floor, went out to the barn, and got to work and helped to do what I needed to do.
What were the typical tasks? We know you got to get the cows milked at least twice a day, mornings and afternoons. What else comprised your farm work in an average day, Gene?
Well, I helped milk cows. I helped feed calves. I helped chop, bale, mow. For 25 years, I did all the tractor driving that I could do to help. I had my favorite things I did, and I didn't like.
This is what I want to know. What was your favorite task on the farm?
Oh, I love chopping hay. I love mowing hay, and I love driving the baler.
Oh, that does sound like good fun.
And I hated fencing. Absolutely. I never learned how to do it. I wasn't capable.
Does anybody really like it? I mean, I don't.
No.
That is just backbreaking, unfun work.
Yeah.
I've only tried to put a post in once, and I was like, oh, I thought I would have an angle on it since I was 6 feet. No such luck.
No.
I literally feel your pain. Jim, did you have a favorite task on the farm?
Milking the cows.
Milking the cows.
Because he was there just seeing the milk come into the bulk tank and things like that. Even on the last day we sold our cows, the bulk tank was plumb full.
Amazing.
They poured out.
They poured out all their love.
Yes, they did.
As someone who spent the greatest majority of my life as a paper pusher, the opportunities that I've had to see the metaphoric bucket of milk when I actually have done real work and you can see the fruits of your labor, it's really special. So yes. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your lives with us. Brian, we're going to have you come back in a little bit. We're going to talk about the changing economy of farming. We're going to talk about the future of the Reisinger farm. Next up, we're going to be joined by Christy Updike of the Farmer Angel Network. We'll discuss the challenges that are facing farmers, some of the mental health challenges, and the resources that are here in Wisconsin to help out family farmers just like Gene, Jim, Malia, and Brian. My big, big thanks to their family for having us here. Stay tuned. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to 107.5. WLAK, Amory's home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin will begin pausing abortion appointments on October 1st following a federal appeals court ruling on a provision in the new federal budget bill. The appeals court allowed the provision blocking Medicaid funding for clinics that provide abortions to remain in place. Over half of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin's roughly 50,000 patients are covered by Medicaid. Organization officials say they will continue to fight the provision in the courts and will resume providing abortion services as soon as they are able. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation will soon begin accepting applications for agricultural roads improvement grant funding. According to a press release, the application period for the first round of grant funding through the new biennial state budget will open on October 6th. $50 million will be available during the first round to support projects across the state focused on improving rural roads and culverts. The grant funding is meant to make transporting the state's agricultural and forestry products more efficient. The Northwest Wisconsin chapter of Whitetails Unlimited is reminding area residents to attend their annual banquet in Shell Lake next week. The 34th annual banquet will be held at the Shell Lake Arts Center on October 2nd, and tickets for the popular event are now on sale. In addition to a buffet dinner, there will also be a silent auction, a live auction, and other contests featuring prizes like hunting and fishing equipment, as well as wildlife and outdoor-themed artwork. Residents interested in attending can buy tickets on the organization's website. A Ladysmith City administrator and his sister have been arrested after allegedly attempting to illegally record a closed county board session. According to the Rusk County Sheriff's Office, 37-year-old Alan Christensen and his 34-year-old sister Stephanie Christensen are facing charges of attempting to use electronic, mechanical, or other devices to intercept oral communications in relation to the closed county board session on August 26th. Video footage allegedly shows Stephanie using her cell phone to record the session through a closed door. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There will be some new characters in the second installment of the Wicked feature film franchise. The Wicked 2, more specifically, Wicked for Good trailer, just dropped, and it features Dorothy, the Scarecrow, and Tin Man. Universal says this is the final trailer before the film's release November 21st of this year. Wicked for Good is a follow-up to 2024's Oscar-nominated Wicked. If you're looking for a new sports documentary, you're in luck. Clemente is the story of one of the best baseball players ever whose career and life ended way too soon. It is now available for streaming on the History Channel and explores baseball great Roberto Clemente's life on and off the field from his early struggles to becoming one of the best players in the game, as well as one of the most beloved. Clemente died in a plane crash in 1972 while delivering aid to Nicaragua. The film is executive produced by basketball great LeBron James and film directing great Richard Linklater. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
Tons of sunshine, not only today, tomorrow, for the entire weekend, but even into next week. A dry stretch and unseasonably warm. Highs today flirt with 80 degrees. Tomorrow and for the weekend, the mid-70s. And back to nearly 80 degrees on Monday. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 77 degrees at our studios.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We don't always agree politically, but Bill McCosh.
Thanks for having me. You want to talk Brewers first?
It's been a really special season, and it's not whether you're wearing red or blue hats. It's yellow and blue.
How do you come together in politics? This is one of the ways.
Yeah.
Find some common ground and then expand on that. And then you got to listen to the other side.
Our neighbors are not our enemies. We can disagree politically, but still find ways to bring our community together.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, we'll have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel on to talk about the effort to get trumped up charges against former FBI Director Jim Comey.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Hello, everybody. Welcome and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's an incredibly special episode of The Maggie Dawn Show. We're here at Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin, where the Reisinger family has raised animals and crops in Sauk County for over 100 years. Such a pleasure. In the first half hour, we were joined by Jim and Jean Reisinger, the matriarch and patriarch of this family farm. It's their 49th anniversary, so we're celebrating with them, which is amazing. We were also joined by Brian Reisinger, author of Land Rich and Cash Poor, about his family's farming journey and tradition. Now we're joined by three women from the Farmer Angel Network. We've got Dorothy Harms, Christy Updike, and Brenda Stotts. Dorothy and Brenda are co-founders of the Farmer Angel Network. And Brenda, I wanted to start with you. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to start the Farmer Angel Network and what your organization aims to do.
Our farm, we sold our cows in 2017. My husband and I had raised three kids on our farm. We farmed just south of Loganville. And he had suffered from depression and things just with the economy, everything going on, escalated some. So I got him back into counseling and tried to get him into a better place. Well, he decided after I had my knee replacement 2 weeks out, he comes in and says, the cows are going. I can't do this myself anymore, even though our kids were there. But depression will do that. You cannot see beyond just normal life. And so he struggled for a whole year in and out of hospitals and stuff. And then he took his life in October 8th, coming up will be 7 years ago. And so from that, we started the Farmer Angel Network, offering resources, because when I was navigating this for my husband, we didn't know where to go, where to look, who to ask for help, what to even do. Because you're out in the middle of nowhere out here in the rural communities. There's not a lot of mental health support out here. He had to go to Madison, which is over an hour away, for treatment. And that gets very challenging, especially when you have a farm to run. You just can't leave, and which I spent a lot of time back and forth. So we started the Farmer Angel Network to offer resources, to bring them to the forefront, so when people need something, it's there. And we speak about it a lot to a lot of different organizations. And we have helped many people that have reached out to us and saying, thank goodness we are here. It's helped. It made it so much easier for them to find support and to at least know they're not alone, because that is what we strive. The biggest is that people need to understand you are not alone. There is somebody out here willing to listen and sit with you. And we don't know all the answers, but we're there and we will help you as the best we can.
Thank you so much for sharing your family's story. And I'm just personally, I'm so sorry for your family's loss, but also
a wellspring of thanks as a native Wisconsinite and coming from a family of farmers, especially on my mother's side. Thank you for what you're doing to help support farmers in this state. I hope it is a model that can be replicated in other states, because I think those pressures are not unique to Wisconsin farms. It's happening throughout the Midwest, especially the upper Midwest. Dorothy, you co-founded the Farmer Angel Network with Brenda Stotz. And before I ask another question, let me tell everybody out there, you can find the Farmer Angel Network at www.farmerangelnetwork.com. They have a resource button there. And again, the suicide hotline, 988. You can also text hello to 741-741. With that, again, all of these resources will be in our show notes from this episode, and you can find it at civicmedia.us/shows. Dorothy, why did you feel inspired to join Brenda in founding the Farmer Angel Network?
Well, at that time, my husband Don and I, again, longtime dairy farmers, Don, fourth generation on his family farm, were going through our own transition, and we're getting to, you know, about ready to sell our cows. And I was very concerned about my husband's mental well-being. Being a dairy farmer was his identity. And who would he be after we sold the dairy cows? And so I went to one of those first meetings to just to get information, to see, you know, where we could get help. And really felt drawn in that this is something that I was became very passionate about, and it's something that needed to be, like Brenda said, brought out to the forefront. And so have continued to work with Farmer Angel Network. I think one of the unique things about what we do is it's a collaboration of agencies. So, you know, we're county public health, UW Extension, local healthcare facilities. But the main thing is that farmers are at the forefront of helping give the direction, helping to spread the message and be the voice for the work that we do. And I think gives validation to it for other farmers so that they can, like, believe in what it is that we're doing, that it's real.
You touched on something that's so important, Dorothy, and that's, you know, when people are going through hard times, I don't really want to have somebody that I don't know or hasn't been through the experiences that I have tell me what I should be doing. I want to talk to somebody that I know that has walked in my shoes or walked the path that I'm on. And the idea that the Farmer Angel Network not only brings in those outside resources, but it connects farmers and farmers' families to other farmers and farmer families. So critical.
It is. You know, our farming community, you know, as the Reisinger said earlier, is that, you know, there are less and less farmers, and that community becomes smaller and smaller. And the things that were, you know, that brought community together are seem to be kind of going by the wayside. So one of the focuses in our efforts is providing events for families to get together, to come out off the farm and have fun together. And oh, by the way, we've got some information for you about mental health. You know, just we kind of use that soft approach. And so that, you know, it's something that brings people out. We want to celebrate farming. We want to show farmers that we appreciate them.
Absolutely. Having some fun together and being in community is so important. And as a softer on-ramp to get folks those resources. Christy, what brought you to get involved with the Farmer Angel Network?
Also the personal stories and being in and around farming for my entire life. My daughter now is trying to find her way in farming and supporting her in that journey. And we've lost too many people to suicide in our lives. So wanting to support those around me and knowing the resources available. So I also represent Sauk Prairie Healthcare at the table and being able to connect the network with the resources that are available out there.
Because there are resources. One of the great things, you know, Brenda, you were talking about the fact that there was such a long travel time. One, you know, COVID was so hard on so many, and especially farmers, right? One good thing that came out of that was the advent of much more virtual therapy options for people. So thank goodness for that. Brenda, let me ask you this. What do you think are some of the more common mental health challenges that face farming communities? You mentioned depression. And one of the things that occurs to me is that when you're struggling with depression and it's coupled with economic pressures, and the sense of duty to your family, it can be just so overwhelming. Is that what you're seeing from other farming families, a similar story to your own? Or is it a more diverse set of mental health challenges? Tell me a little bit about what you see from talking to farmers in the Farmer Angel Network.
When you meet with some families, farmers are very isolated. They're very independent. They've got the I can fix it myself attitude. They don't like to ask for help unless they're at their last end or that it's forced on them. And they're very proud of what they do and what they can accomplish on their own. And sometimes when you have to step inside their world and say, I'm here, I understand, let's sit and talk. And they will, like I tell, we do safe talk training is one of the things that we offer to the communities. And we had talked to these all professionals. And I told them, I said, when a farmer finally decides to go to the doctor, you better listen. Because they're coming one time. And if they don't get what they want and you don't understand, they won't be coming back. They'll try and just figure it out on their own. So I said, take the time, because so many office calls anymore are timed out. Yeah. And I said, it's going to take you at least 10, 15 minutes before they're going to warm up and earn your trust.
Yes.
They're going to talk about their dog, about the weather, about everything else, but why they're there. So I said, you're going to have to give them a little time to understand that they're here. It's hard for them to open up, but it takes a little bit for them to earn the trust that they know that they can trust you and that you're going to understand what they're going through. And that is one thing that we have worked with the Department of Agriculture. When they started telehealth, a lot of them, there was a few farmers that called in and they said, this person doesn't understand a bit. Yes. They don't understand farming.
Yes.
Well, now they have more people on staff now that have a farming background or do something in farming so that at least they can understand. Because if you do not have a farming background, it's very hard to understand the hours. Well, why don't you just not do it that day? Well, it has to be done that day. The weather, you have so many things against you, and people who do not understand farming, it's very hard for them to comprehend what their stress level is.
That was my very next question, Brenda, and I'll turn to you, Dorothy, is talking about sort of clinician competency, right, when they're actually talking to people. And we were talking, ladies, a little bit before we got on air about the fact that mental health and asking for help has had such stigma, and the very nature of farming can be isolating, and that clinicians have to know who the people are that are coming to them and try to meet them where they're at. I know the Farmer Angel Network has done a lot to try to improve that. Brenda was speaking to a bit of it. Do you think we have a sufficient amount of clinicians and therapists that understand the challenges and the culture around family farming and farmers in Wisconsin to meet these mental health needs?
It's growing, but I think we're still far short of that. And I think, like Brenda said, oftentimes just getting that access, I can speak personally right now. My husband is working with a therapist, and the one that he's working with is an hour and a half away. She'd like to refer him to somebody here close by, and we've been told it's at least a 3-month wait for an appointment. So, there's just more that needs to be done. And I know the Department of Ag, the Wisconsin Farm Center has provided training for clinicians to kind of help give them to understand the culture. Mm-hmm. The agrarian imperative is what they call it, about why the
that
land.
That sounds fancy, the agrarian imperative.
But it means that the land is important above all else.
That makes sense. Why don't we just say that, though? You know what I'm saying? The land is important above all else. Folks, if you're just joining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. We've got a special episode today. I'm joined by three women that work with the Farmer Angel Network, two of their founders, Brenda Stotz, as well as Dorothy Harms and Christy Updike. We're talking about the mental health challenges facing the farming community in Wisconsin and beyond and some of the resources that are available. We're going to talk about those resources, where you can find them, and share a little bit more of these ladies' stories when we come back. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
as Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We're taking a little bit of a detour this week on the Recombobulation Minute so I can tell you about a brand new project we've been working on here at Civic Media that we're really, really excited about. So here at the Civic Media Network, we produce a tremendous amount of content on any given day. From our news team all over the state to our daily lineup of political talk and commentary shows to our many podcasts and weekend shows to local morning shows to all kinds of digital content, there can be a lot to keep up with. But now we're bringing you a new way to find all of this tremendous content all in one place. It's a new email newsletter called Civic Media Today. Like the Recombobulation Area, it also publishes on Substack. This is going to be your one-stop shop to connect with everything across the Civic Media extended universe, from podcasts and live streams of your favorite shows to the latest on everything happening across Wisconsin. So go subscribe to Civic Media Today.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got an incredibly special episode for you all today, and I'm so humbled to be here at the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, where the Reisinger family has farmed both crops and raised animals for over 100 years. We're here celebrating with the Reisingers because it is Jim and Jean's 49th wedding anniversary. We're talking about the changes to the farming industry that we've seen here in the United States and beyond. Right now, we've got a set of three incredible ladies. They're all associated with the Farmer Angel Network, an organization founded by Brenda Stotts and Dorothy Harms to help support the mental health of farmers in Wisconsin and beyond. It is not an exaggeration to say that farmers in Wisconsin have been under incredible both economic and therefore mental strain. The Farmer Angel Network is helping to provide resources to address that at an absolutely
critical time. So thank you all, ladies, for being here with me. And of course, thanks again to the Reisingers for hosting us here. Let me start with you, Dorothy. Tell us a little bit about the specific resources and programming that is available to farmers and their families through the Farmer Angel Network. And again, folks, you can find that at farmerangelnetwork.com.
Well, while many of our network members are trained in QPR skills, so QPR is question, persuade, refer, okay, and safe talk. So reaching out to us is kind of, can be an initial stop. But one of our really strong partners is the Wisconsin Farm Center. And we work very closely, especially with Karen Endres there. They have a 24/7 hotline that there is a live person answering that phone call. And when somebody needs to talk to somebody about, whether it's, they're having suicidal thoughts or whether it's just, I just need to kind of unload on somebody. Mm-hmm. And they have access to getting telehealth appointments within that following week so that they can get some help, immediate help to them.
Immediately. That's so important when people are struggling with depression or suicidal thought to get that help and resource to folks right away. They can find that number at the Farmer Angel Network website.
They can, yes. Yeah.
And again, that's farmerangelnetwork.com. Of course, there's the National Suicide Hotline at 988, or you can text hello to 741-741. Here's the number specifically from the Farmer Angel Network. Their 24/7 Farmer Wellness Helpline is 888-901-2558. Again, that's 888-901-2558. All of these resources will be in our show notes following the conclusion of our program today. Christy, let me ask you, what do you think the role of education, just being here today and talking about this out in the open, sharing these resources, bringing it out of the dark into the light, both literally and metaphorically, what role does education play in addressing the mental health challenges facing our farming communities today?
It's huge. So we talk about the hard stuff, and people can talk to us, and we'll work through their challenges with them. So that farmer-to-farmer peer support and connecting them to the right resources. We are not therapists. We're not clinicians. We are folks at the ground, boots on the ground. We've had experience, lived experience. We can share our own personal stories of what we've gone through and connect folks. So those we have worked with have literally told us, "You saved my life." By hearing somebody else say, "I've been there," and they realize that somebody else has had that thought or gone through that experience, they're willing to reach out and ask for help and connect to others.
Listening and being open and letting people feel heard is the first step. Thank you, ladies, for saving people's lives here and for starting this organization. Brenda, let me ask you, what signs or symptoms should families and communities really be on the lookout for if they think someone's struggling with mental health issues?
There's quite a few that I didn't recognize either. The month after my husband died, there was a magazine article that came out. It was a farm magazine called The Furrow, and it had all the listings of telltale signs, and one was neglecting your animals. My husband was meticulous, and that, and I look back now, he just was selling cows. He was doing things that weren't right. Not maintaining your machinery or your buildings, not being able to go out or wanting to go out if you're a social person. My husband used to talk on the phone all the time, and he regressed from that even. They lose connection with the outside world. They just draw inside. Or they can get the other way where they're very aggressive and just don't want to talk about it. They push you off. The other thing is that you look for is they want you to make the decisions, where he always was strong in making decisions, even taking over the checkbook because he didn't trust himself enough to do it anymore because he loved numbers and he was very, meticulous with that. And that was all signs that I never saw as red flags going through it. But after he passed away and you're reading all this stuff and it's like, he hit every one of them. And so you look back, so now that's why we do what we do, is to make people more aware that there is stuff going on out here and pay attention.
When the folks you love seem to not take any joy and pride in the things that always brought them joy and pride, pay attention, ask, refer them to the Farmer Angel Network. Again, it is farmerangelnetwork.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please give your elected officials a call. Let them know that our farmers need mental health resources. We can and should do better. It is a matter of health and wellness for all of us. If our farmers are hurting, all of our families are hurting. So please pay attention, reach out, get some help. Thank you, ladies, for everything you do for Wisconsin. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Brian Reisinger will be joining us again. And we got the statewide text to win contest. Stay with us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President Trump at the White House signing an executive order on a proposed deal to keep TikTok running in the U.S. Under the deal, U.S. investors would oversee American users' data and algorithms would be moved to a U.S. cloud service of Oracle. ABC's Selena Wang says few other details are known and it's not a done deal yet.
And we were also told earlier by the White House that this executive order includes a 120-day extension to allow all of this to continue to fall into place. So while this is an important step that paves the way for this deal to be completed, it looks like it's not totally done and set in stone yet.
Federal authorities say the gunman who opened fire at an immigration facility in Dallas yesterday meant to target ICE personnel, instead killing one detainee and injuring